Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Your Birth Bestie podcast. You are listening to episode number 51, all about epidurals, where we are going to talk about epidurals in detail, the risks and benefits of them, potential effects on labor, and then things to be aware of regarding your newborn and potential effects on breastfeeding. Epidurals are very, very commonly used today, and I am all for supporting moms when making a choice whether they want to use an epidural as a tool or not in labor, or if they want to completely avoid it. That is up to you. But what I don't like happening is when moms feel guilty or maybe less than for choosing an epidural or plan for an epidural simply because they don't think that they can handle the pain. Getting an epidural seems like the common standard thing to do in the hospital setting, but I want to empower you with some information and hopefully encourage you to learn more about epidurals and then make the best decision for you. And if you really want to avoid an epidural, I think it's really the why behind your reasoning that will make that happen for you. If that why isn't strong enough and a center value in your birth planning process, I think it's really hard to accomplish. But I also think if you are, 100% wanting to get the epidural, you already know that. I still think it's helpful to listen to this episode and this information so you really know how to best utilize the epidural as a tool for your own labor and limit any possible risk to you or to your baby. Hey there, I'm Beth Connors, a midwife and mom of two, but also your birth bestie. In this podcast, we'll dive deep into everything you need to feel confident, prepared, and in control, from baby bump to delivery room, from practical tips to personal stories. We'll cover it all so you know exactly what to expect every step of the way. Let's get into it. So let's start by talking about what an epidural is and a little bit about the procedure. So an epidural is the most common and most effective pain management tool that can be used during childbirth. And in the United States, depending on which study you read, it is estimated that between 70 and 90% of women in the hospital setting are using epidurals during their labor. So if you are familiar with maybe how an IV is worked and how that's placed into either your hand or your arm for labor, if that's something that you consent to, it's a very similar process with the epidural. So a needle is used to locate the area for the epidural, and then a small flexible tube or catheter is then placed with that needle, and then the needle is removed. So there is no needle in your back that stays in place. There is no needle in your arm or hand when you get an IV. So sometimes people are a little nervous about that or a little bit confused. And then that catheter that's in your back is taped and secured in place so it can be used for administration of that epidural medication. The epidural space is what that anesthesiologist or the CRNA, which is a certified registered nurse anesthetist, that those are the providers that are able to actually do this procedure of giving you an epidural. And they'll be focusing on that epidural space and getting into that space for the medication to be administered there through that catheter. From the time that you request your epidural to the time that your anesthesiologist or CRNA walks into your room, just a heads up, it can be anywhere from a few minutes, depending on the hospital, to usually on average about an hour. So definitely know this ahead of time when you are planning your pain management, because every facility is different. Not every hospital has these providers that are on the labor and delivery floor. Sometimes they're coming from different floors. Sometimes they're on call and they're not even within the hospital. They might be like 15 minutes away on call. So just kind of have an idea if an epidural is part of your pain management plan or think it might be. Just ask these questions if you're curious about them. Part of the beginning epidural process is also giving you IV fluids to help maintain your blood pressure during the procedure. So your providers will a lot of times want a certain amount of fluid administered to you before they start the procedure. So this is something to keep in mind as well in the planning process. So every provider is different, but usually it takes about 30 minutes or so in order for the nurse to kind of set you up with what you need, and then the anesthesiologist will come in after that. So just wanted to give you a heads up there in terms of the time frame when asking for an epidural and how long that can take. And then when the provider is finally in your room, which sometimes seems like forever, the epidural setup itself takes about 10 minutes, and then the actual procedure takes about 10 minutes as well, maybe a little bit longer. Your nurse will then help you sit on the edge of the bed, probably rest your feet on a stool for support, and then curl over a pillow or lean on your support person right in front of you. This position that you want to be in is pretty much having the worst slouching position of your life and sticking your back out like a cat to help open up your epidural space and make it just a little bit easier for the provider that's doing this procedure to get to the right spot and have this be an effective pain management tool for you. So definitely follow what your provider is telling you and what your nurses are telling you to get you properly set up and in the right spot. At the same time that you are all getting set up, a blood pressure cuff will be placed on your arm with a device on your finger or maybe your toe to measure your oxygen levels during this procedure. And then your doctor will be setting up the epidural supplies, maybe washing off your back with some cold liquid to sterilize everything in between contractions. They are really good about communicating what they are doing the whole time because you really can't see what's going on behind you. And then they're able to, you know, communicate every step, tell you what they need you to do, and then you are also able to communicate what you're feeling. And, you know, if you start to feel a contraction, it just lets them have a moment to pause. And then what you'll feel after all the setup is done is they will give you a lidocaine injection right in your back. This will feel like a bee sting for about 10 seconds, which I've heard is the worst part of the epidural procedure because it's the part that you feel, and it's the stinging sensation for just about 10 seconds. And this helps to numb part of your back so you don't feel that needle poke that comes next. When the lidocaine is effective, the needle will be inserted for the epidural, and that small flexible catheter tubing I was talking about before is threaded through, and then the needle is taken out. So the catheter stays in your back until after you deliver your baby, and you will have a continuous flow of epidural medication throughout your labor, really as long as you want. There's not a time limit for how long an epidural can really stay on. So sometimes it's even, you know, a day or so. So this is something to keep in mind too, that the medication isn't wearing out with an epidural because that catheter is in your back and constantly giving you an infusion of medication. The medication itself is typically a mix of local anesthesia and opioids, which will work together to block those pain signals that will never actually end up reaching your brain. And it's very effective, so you're not feeling the pain of contractions. You might be feeling pressure or, you know, just that they're happening, but the sensation of pain should not be felt in that same intensity that you were feeling before. So that's why most moms that do have epidurals have a really great experience because it is so effective at really completely getting rid of their pain in most situations. As far as when you are quote unquote allowed, which, you know, I don't like that word, to get an epidural, this is actually 100% up to you, honestly. I will briefly mention that I have been in situations where providers don't let their patients get an epidural until active labor has started, or, you know, they're dilated to 6 centimeters, which is the definition, the textbook definition of active labor, in order for them to get into a good labor pattern before then getting the epidural. And even though I can totally see the good intention here and wanting to limit medical intervention and help labor progress naturally before this tool of an epidural is used, you are the only one that knows when something like an epidural is appropriate for you. And whatever you're feeling, whatever situation you've been going through, and whatever's going on in your mind, you are the one that should be in control of the situation and should be able to request an epidural at any time, as long as it's, you know, medically safe for you. To give you the full idea of when moms request an epidural, some moms choose to get an epidural before their induction even starts, their scheduled induction. So they might be 0 centimeters dilated at this point and just are not wanting to feel any part of this induction. And that is their right to have an epidural at any point during their admission. And then some women might get to 10 centimeters. They go throughout their whole entire labor process without medication. And then they hit 10 centimeters and they have even maybe been pushing and maybe been pushing for an hour, and then they're just done with what they're feeling. They are done with this experience. They are done feeling, and they want the epidural. And this is the right for them to be able to choose to have an epidural, even though you might think, well, they're so close to the end, they can do it without, but maybe they don't want to anymore. And as soon as you don't want to do something anymore, it's very hard, you know, to bring them back to the situation where maybe they were going for an unmedicated birth. So at this point, sometimes it's the right call for moms to make the choice to get an epidural. And basically, as long as you can sit still for the procedure, even if you're 10 centimeters and pushing, and you aren't, you know, actively delivering your baby, it is usually still possible to get you an epidural in those cases. In the case of needing shorter pain management coverage, it would actually be a spinal epidural where an injection of medication is given into your back rather than a catheter with a continuous flow of medication. But I didn't want to go into the different types of epidurals because this episode would get much longer. But you can ask your provider which options are available to you and in what situations either one would be given and which would maybe be the best thing for you to plan for. Let's next talk about the risks and the benefits of labor epidurals. Epidurals, like we mentioned before, are the most effective form of pain relief, which is why they are so popular, because women can often have a labor experience without feeling their contraction pain and really without much discomfort at all if it works perfectly. It can also be used as a tool for really exhausted moms going through a really hard labor, maybe not having slept in a few days if they were in prodromal labor. There's a lot of reasons why moms would be exhausted during birth, so epidurals are a great tool to use for that. And epidurals are also a safer alternative to IV pain medications for baby because even though a small amount of medication might reach the baby from the epidural, it is much less than what would reach the baby with an IV medication that's given. Many moms also choose epidurals to feel more comfortable and in control of the situation of labor and birth, which is usually pretty much out of our control and very much surrendering to this out-of-body experience that, you know, childbirth can bring about all of these emotions and physical feelings as well. So a lot of moms, you know, maybe aren't comfortable with that. So they would rather get an epidural, feel more comfortable, and feel more present in that moment. But everybody experiences labor and birth differently. So this is something just to keep in mind. As far as risks, there is a bit of a list that I will go through. And I first wanted to mention that thinking about having an epidural, you have to kind of imagine what position you're going to be in the bed, probably on your back for a little bit, and you will have limited movement, right? This in itself can lead to a longer pushing stage, often the use of Pitocin to speed up the progress of your labor, increased risk of forceps or vacuum delivery, and then also with these interventions, potentially an increased risk of perineal tearing. The medication that is given through the epidural can also lower your blood pressure, causing nausea and lightheadedness, which then can lead to needing more IV fluids and potentially other medications to help you manage the situation of the low blood pressure. The drop in blood pressure can also limit oxygen that's going to the baby that can potentially cause baby to be in distress. Other side effects are the loss of bladder control, so it is standard to place a urinary catheter for that. Maternal fever is also common, itchy skin, and nausea, like I mentioned, are the more common ones when you get an epidural. More rarely, women can get something called a spinal headache that would require treatment a few days after your delivery. They may experience slowed breathing and drowsiness or sleepiness. Also an infection where the needle was inserted, a sore back, and nerve damage. And these things are very serious, but also very, very rare. So hopefully this little bit about the risks of epidurals can help you see that the medical cascade of intervention really begins as soon as you request the epidural. So many things are really going on at the same time. You're being attached to a blood pressure cuff, continuous oxygen monitoring. The baby will need continuous monitoring with an epidural. You'll get IV fluids, possibly Pitocin if your labor stalls out for a little bit, a urinary catheter, increased risk to have a vacuum or forceps delivery, and then tearing. So it can really just be one thing after another. And when I say it can, it doesn't mean that it has to be this way. There are so many ways that we can support moms with epidurals to limit all of these interventions. But you really have to be prepared ahead of time with information and different ways that you want to be supported in order to make this happen. So maybe I'll do another episode about that another time if you guys are interested on specifically supporting moms with epidurals and different positions, things like that. So let me know if that is something that you would be interested in. But the next thing I wanted to talk about is how epidurals can affect your labor progress, like slowing down your labor. This is something that a lot of moms hear about and are worried about if they are planning for an epidural. And really the answer to this is I think it's really important to understand that epidurals definitely affect labor and the dynamics of your hormonal response and your ability to move. But they do not actually typically make the first stage of labor longer. And remember that first stage of labor is where your cervix is dilating from 0 centimeters to 10 centimeters. Regardless if somebody agrees to having an epidural or not, this first stage is actually pretty consistent. But the difference can then be seen in the second stage of labor, particularly that pushing phase after you are completely dilated to 10 centimeters and you start to push. It has been shown that the second stage of labor tends to be longer for women who get an epidural compared to the women that do not have an epidural. On average, that second stage of labor is about 13 minutes longer with an epidural, and it can be due to a few different things, including the decreased effectiveness of your contractions, leading to less coordinated or maybe less effective pushing efforts. Epidurals can also relax the pelvic floor muscles and change the way that the baby is able to descend or move down the birth canal and rotate for delivery. So this can actually make the pushing stage longer. But I did want to mention here too, in terms of relaxing the pelvic floor muscles, I have also seen, you know, I've seen that part of it, but I've also seen the opposite be true as well, that a mom is, you know, fighting for her unmedicated labor. She doesn't want the epidural at all. And it gets to a point where, you know, we think it might be a good option for her to get the epidural because maybe her pelvic floor muscles are tight. She is tensing with all the contractions and she's just not making progress for a very long time. And then mom will agree to that epidural. And within 30 minutes, she goes from 7 centimeters to 10 centimeters to baby very, very fast. And there was something in her body, something that just needed to reduce the tension from the epidural, let her body relax, maybe get her a little bit of a rest. And it actually helped her labor progress speed up and have her deliver more easily. So this is just the opposite side of the spectrum, not saying that in all cases, it will go one way or the other. So that's why birth and women are so individualized and why their care should be so individualized too, especially decisions like whether or not they want an epidural. And then as far as the difference in the epidural versus non-epidural and that prolonged second stage of labor or that longer second stage of labor, the difference isn't harmful itself in that 13 minutes average longer with an epidural. But prolonged pushing, if you have an epidural, can come with additional risks such as infections, severe perineal tearing, postpartum hemorrhage, and the need for assistance at delivery like forceps or vacuum extraction that, if then needed, could potentially lead to a necessary C-section. And the last thing that I wanted to talk about today is the effects of an epidural on your baby and then on breastfeeding, if that's what you are choosing to do. It's important to understand that, yes, epidurals are considered safe, and babies born to mothers who have gotten an epidural typically have equal Apgar scores compared to those who are born to moms without an epidural. And if you aren't familiar with an Apgar score, this is a quick assessment of a baby that is done at 1 minute and 5 minutes of life as an evaluation to see how well your baby is transitioning to being born, looking at things like heart rate, breathing, muscle tone, their reflexes, and then their skin color. So this in itself is reassuring that the Apgars are very similar between moms who have epidurals and moms who do not. There are some other things, though, to consider about how an epidural might impact your baby, particularly regarding breastfeeding. And epidural medication can cross the placenta and enter a newborn's circulation, possibly affecting their ability to latch and suck effectively at the breast. Also, maternal fever, which can sometimes be a sign of a side effect of epidurals, this can be linked to lower Apgar scores in babies. Another way epidurals impact birth and newborns is influencing the hormonal response during labor, including your natural oxytocin levels. So we have talked about oxytocin before, and it's a hormone that your body makes that is important in order for your labor to progress and stimulate those contractions from getting stronger and closer together to help your cervix dilate. But they're also really, oxytocin is also really important for breastfeeding. And when oxytocin is affected or limited with the use of an epidural, you may notice decreased milk production initially. So just something to be aware of. And maybe even you want to consider collecting colostrum during pregnancy, starting at about 36 weeks or so, if that's something that's safe for you to do, that you would actually have a backup method for feeding your baby if it maybe takes some time for your milk to come in. So instead of going to formula right away, you'd be able to actually use colostrum that you've already collected during your pregnancy. So something to keep in mind if you want to have an epidural, knowing that it could potentially decrease your milk production. And then if you're wanting to breastfeed, having other options available to feed your baby as well until you're waiting for your milk to come in. And then a few other things to mention that many people don't consider being related to epidurals is that with the higher risk of forceps or vacuum use, this can lead to more severe tearing, leading to longer repair times that can actually then delay that skin-to-skin bonding with your baby, which would affect the initiation of breastfeeding as well. With this being known, though, I did also want you to know that you can have skin-to-skin with your baby while you are being repaired if it's comfortable for you and this is something that you want and you feel safe holding the baby. Or maybe baby is skin-to-skin with you and your partner is helping support the baby on your chest, or maybe baby skin to skin with your partner. I know for me, I had a significant repair with my first baby that took over an hour, and none of the nurses or anybody offered for me to see or to hold my baby. And, you know, I didn't even think to ask, which is so heartbreaking for me now looking back on. But I just want you to know to please, you know, as long as baby is good and you are healthy and you are wanting and able to hold your baby, you should absolutely be able to do so immediately after delivery. And then the last part that I just briefly want to mention about breastfeeding and epidurals is that when you get an epidural, we already talked about getting those additional IV fluids to help stabilize your blood pressure. But there are also a few things to know about these IV fluids. And IV fluids can actually lead to painful engorgement of the breast postpartum, potentially impacting those initial breastfeeds in the first few days. So something to keep in mind ahead of time. The additional fluids in labor can also result in initial increase in your baby's first weight. And, you know, baby might be seeming heavier due to that fluid retention that they have. And then when they are weighed later on in the hospital, they will have a greater weight loss than what is typically expected because of that skewed first weight due to the fluids that you are given in labor. And then with a greater weight loss, there may be a recommendation from your pediatrician to supplement baby's feeding with formula, which might not always be necessary and is sometimes really just a precaution, which would then interfere with your breastfeeding goals. So knowing this ahead of time, that this can be, you know, an issue when you have an epidural, and then just having that in the back of your head, if baby does have more than expected weight loss, asking questions about if the IV fluids would have something to do with that, and if you could maybe, you know, wait on supplementing if baby is healthy and otherwise everything is going well. So I just wanted you to know that ahead of time. And I even encourage moms to meet prenatally with a lactation consultant and help to really formulate a feeding plan and goals that you might have that are going to work for you and your family. So when situations like this might arise, you have a contact point to then refer back to, ask more questions, and just really feel overall supported throughout your entire hospital stay with the providers that are there with you, and then also with the ones that you have built a relationship before you went into the hospital, and then also the ones that will be, you know, helping you throughout the postpartum. Thank you so much for tuning in to Your Birth Bestie podcast today. I hope it has helped you understand a bit more about epidurals, and really that the most important thing is that you are informed and prepared going into your birth and have a pain management plan that you are comfortable with. If you are not really wanting an epidural but aren't sure how to go about preparing for that, I would first suggest that you find reasons why you don't want an epidural, and having those really strong why feelings to then reflect on during your pregnancy and then coming back to during your labor to keep moving forward in this goal. I also think it's beneficial to have a doula and a solid support team around you to guide you through having an unmedicated birth. But regardless of your pain management plan, I would love to share my resources with you rooted in informed decision making, mindset, and autonomy so you feel 100% prepared going into the hospital to have your baby and your support person also feels confident as well supporting you. You can find me on Instagram at BethConnors_CNM and shoot me a message with additional questions or comments. And if you're looking for more information about pregnancy and childbirth preparation, I invite you to check out my online birth course, Fearless Birth Academy, at BethConnors.com/birth course. Thank you again for being here, and I will be back again next Tuesday with another episode. Bye, everyone.